So if you're joining us for the first time, we are doing a series at the moment through this term up until Christmas, and looking at what it means to be holy. And it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a journey for us. And I think we have an inkling that people that talk about Jesus, people that claim to follow Jesus, there should be something different about them, that there should be something maybe even holy about them. And if there isn't anything particularly different, then are they really following Jesus? So if you're here with somebody who claims to follow Jesus or calls themselves a Christian, and you're thinking, you know what, they're not that holy, then why not let them know later on? Because they would love it. They would absolutely love it. When we think about people who are holy, usually we think about people who are religious, people who are different, maybe otherworldly, maybe wise, maybe they're a holy one. But then sometimes there are people who we think they're a bit kind of odd or removed from society or a sense of aloofness or that whole kind of holier than thou. Maybe think of monks or nuns. But what about the person sitting next to you right now? So if there's some, if you're sitting next to somebody, most of you are sitting next to somebody, why don't you just have a look at them? Look at their faces. Do they look like somebody who is holy? Do they look like somebody who could be holy? It may be you know the person very well. It may be that you've only just met them. Isn't it interesting that looking also involves talking? But that's just one of those things. So if we're not necessarily just talking about monks and nuns and those sort of people, what about holy plumbers or holy farmers or holy school kids or holy school teachers? What about leaders of churches? Are they supposed to be holy? What about leaders of business? What about mums and dads, and what about sons and daughters? If you are someone who calls themselves a follower of Jesus, you are holy, and you are on a quest to be holy. And what I want to get to today is the point that you see on the screen right there is to be holy is really to be human. That there's an expectation of what it means to be human is also to be holy. How would you know if the person next to you was holy? Would you know that someone's holy just by looking at their faces? So for us as a church, when we're exploring what it means to be holy, it could feel like a bit of a journey, a bit of a quest, that there's a view, we're trying to get somewhere. Maybe climb up this mountain, maybe there's this journey, there's this pursuit of something called holiness. And it may be that we're feeling a long, long way from anything to do with holiness. Or it may be that we're wanting to walk away from that, that that journey up the mountain, that journey up to experience something of God's holiness is something we really don't want to do. Or maybe we've started that journey and we just thought, no, this is too difficult, we're going to turn around. When you look at someone's face, you're looking at something of their identity. Faces are so important when it comes to expressions, when it comes to knowing what someone is like. So if you close your eyes for a moment, can you picture the face of the person next to you? If you look at that face again, if you open your eyes again, look at that face, what is that face telling you now? Is that face saying, stop looking at me, this is weird? Or is that face saying, I wish I'd never been invited here this morning? Or is that face looking perplexed or angry or happy? Is there a smile? One of the things that we love to do on a Wednesday night in our house is watch The Great British Bake Off. And some of you have watched it, some of you can't stand it, and I can kind of understand that. There's one particular contestant called Nadia. And what really struck most people that were on social media or watching Bake Off was her expressions. that she had the most expressionful, is that right? Expressive, there we go. Expressive face. And there's something about faces which is so important. One of the words for an old word we don't use very much now, talking about a facial expression, is someone's countenance, how they look, what their face looks like. And it may be that you could look at someone's face and say, you know what, that's a holy person. But what about the face of God? What about looking at God's face? If we looked at God's face, if we were able to look at God's face, what would we see? Throughout the Bible, God's face is a big deal. Looking at God's face is something that people can't do. But then there's little moments, people like Moses, and then later people like Isaiah, who see something of God, see something of God's face, and it changes their lives. We're looking at what it means to be holy, and God's face is holy. Later on this morning, we're going to be dedicating some children. There's going to be four children that are going to be dedicated this morning. Iona, and Timothy, and Annabelle, and Cara. And to be dedicated is to be devoted, to be committed. And so these parents are saying to God, thank you for this gift of this child, and we're dedicating this child to you. We thank you for this gift of this child, but we're dedicating their life to you. And then maybe at some point when they, if they choose to or not, they will be baptized, but that's really up to them. We're not going to kind of enforce that on them at a young age, but we're going to say, God, this is your child just as much as it's our child. And then we're going to be baptizing as well. And that sense of when you're baptized, of being consecrated, being sanctified, there's a holy moment. There's this holy baptism. That these moments of dedication, these moments of baptism, are holy moments. Last week we talked about how to be holy is to belong to God. And these moments of baptism and dedication are saying, these people, these children, this life belongs to God. My question for you this morning is, if you could, would you want to be holy? And the second question is, would you want to see God's face? If you could stand it, would you want to see God's face? It seems like many people who claim to be holy live in some sort of miserable holiness, that the expressions on their faces are kind of dour and miserable. It's like, I don't really want to be like that. Or maybe it seems like climbing that mountain, it seems like too much effort. Or some of us may think, well, if I'm going to be holy, it may mean I'm going to be legalistic or judgmental or a hypocrite. Maybe you know someone who thinks that they're holy, or they're, you know, their whole holier-than-thou attitude just makes you sick. How do we become holy? This is a picture of a farmer in Malawi. And he's working on his fields, and there's a passage in Hebrews 12, verse 14, which says, make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. See, when a farmer wants to grow some seed, he plows his field, he sows the seed, he fertilizes it, he cultivates it, all the while knowing that ultimately he is utterly dependent on forces outside himself. It's an act of faith. To put that seed in the ground is an act of faith. He knows he cannot cause the seed to germinate, nor can he produce the rain or the sunshine for growing. But in order to have a successful harvest, he is dependent on these things from God. Yet a farmer knows that unless he diligently pursues his responsibilities to plow and plant and fertilize and cultivate, he can't expect a harvest. For us to be holy has to involve some sort of effort, some act of diligence. But it's also based on grace, that we do our part and then God does his part. It's a joint venture between us and God. God doesn't just sort of say, okay, there you go, holiness, you've arrived. But there is this journey, there's this quest to be holy, and it comes out of grace. He gives us the power to do what he requires and what he expects of us. The second bit of that passage in Hebrews 12:14 says, make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. The second part says, without holiness, no one will see the Lord. Holiness is an essential part of what it means to see God's face. That to see God has to involve some measure of holiness. But it's this joint venture. This process of becoming holy is what in the Bible is called sanctification. It's where we get the word saints. So right in the beginning of a lot of the letters in the New Testament, Paul and Peter and all these different people say, you know, to the saints in Ephesus, to these holy people, to these people that are being sanctified. How are you doing with becoming holy? If you're a follower of Jesus, are you making every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy? Do you recognize that without holiness, you won't see God? In Isaiah chapter 6, the prophet of Isaiah sees the Lord. He has a moment where he sees God. He catches a glimpse of God. I don't think he saw God's full face. I think he just caught a glimpse of something of God, and it changed his life. It says in Isaiah 6 that in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Then he says, above him were seraphim, which are kind of like angels, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. Holy, holy, holy. It's not very often that words are repeated three times. You might say, well, holy, that's quite holy. Holy, holy is even more holy, but holy, holy, holy is extreme holiness. It's holiness turned up to the maximum amount of holiness. This is an amazing moment for Isaiah. And he says that at the sound of their voices, the doorposts and the threshold shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. In God's grace, Isaiah was able to experience and witness something of God's holiness. And he's left on the floor in a quivering wreck. When he sees something of God's holiness, it changes his life. To be holy, this means that God is perfectly pure, that God is pure perfection. In God, there is no evil, there is no darkness. It's the sum of all of God's attributes. It's kind of the radiance of God's glory. But it also means that God hates sin. And if you're somebody who's here for the first time, think, okay, there he goes. He's going to be talking about sin now. It's very difficult to talk about holiness without talking about sin. You see, Isaiah's response, when he sees that, his response is, woe to me, I cried. I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. Isaiah knows he's in trouble, because he sees something of his own sin, something of his own unholiness. Sin is really the absence of holiness, and holiness is the absence of sin. And for those of us who are following Jesus, we've been set free from the sin which holds us back, but we have to still deal with that on a daily basis. And so we're becoming more and more holy, becoming more and more like Jesus, and sin is having less and less of a hold on us as we're pursuing holiness. See, God is against sin because he is for you. If I'm for sin, then God will stand against those desires because they will hurt and damage other people. God is holy and he hates sin. See, we don't really want an unholy God. We don't want a God who ignores sin. Similarly, you don't want parents who ignore bad behavior in their children, who let their children do whatever they want. You may know parents like that. But we don't want parents to be like that. We want parents to know, to be able to say, this is our expectation of you. So I'm going to embarrass two people. One of them is Danny. Danny, come here for a minute. And I'm going to pick on you, Matt. Okay? So this is my little boy, Danny. And this is Mark and Jude's and Becky's, well, Mark and Jude's son and Becky's brother, Matthew. And because Danny is my son, because we're in a relationship, I have the privilege of being able to say, actually, this is wrong behavior and this is right. There's a sense of discipline. There's a sense of, you know, he's not going to be beaten up or anything, but there is that sense of, because I love him, there's that sense of these are the boundaries and this is right behavior, this is wrong behavior. Let me just step over there for a minute. Now, with Matthew, I know him a little bit, but I don't have that same relationship. So my role is not to discipline Matthew. That's your role. Because it's all in relationship. Thank you, both of you. Have a seat. With God, if you're in a relationship with God, he has that right to say, this is the way, walk in it. It's all based on relationship. Holiness is all about relationship. It's relationship driven. It's not rule driven. And we have to get that right when we start talking about holiness. It comes out of that relationship that we've been invited to call Holy God our Heavenly Father. And that's enormous. God cares deeply about sin because it destroys his precious children. God longs for holiness in us because he knows it's the way to wholeness. The other thing is, like Danny, he's always going to be my child. I'm not going to throw him out. If he walks away, if he never calls us, if he does something which is catastrophic in his life, he is always our child. And we will always love him. And it's the same thing with God. God loves you so, so much. But God is also holy. There's this holy love. There's one commentator, a guy called Emil Brunner, says, the cross is the only place where the loving, forgiving, merciful God is revealed in such a way that we perceive that his holiness and his love are equally infinite. I'll repeat that. The cross is the only place where the loving, forgiving, merciful God is revealed in such a way that we perceive that his holiness and his love are equally infinite. But it all comes down to grace. If you're going to be pursuing holiness, if you're going to be eliminating sin from your life, it's all about grace. Going back to the farmer, it's all about grace and effort. And so for sometimes we're thinking, well, I don't want to be holy because I don't want to become legalistic or judgmental or be accused of being like a Pharisee or being a hypocrite. And sometimes we give up on that journey too quickly. And we forget that it's all about grace. One of my favorite theologians who died maybe 2 or 3 years ago, a guy called Dallas Willard, said, divine grace is God acting in our life to accomplish what we cannot do on our own. We take that grace and then we apply it. It's by grace that we can experience something of God's love. What Isaiah experiences when he's flat on his face in front of God is that sense of holiness, but also a moment of grace. He's able to experience something of God's, and we maybe use this word too much, God's awesomeness. Sometimes we think, oh, that's awesome. You know, those chips, they're awesome. That pizza. But that moment of that pure holiness, that pure awesomeness, that moment leaves you just, I can't say anything. That's just so incredible. That's all grace. Dallas Willard goes on to say that grace is not opposed to effort. So it's not opposed to actions. What it's opposed to is earning. You can't earn God's favor. You can't earn God's grace. But because of God's grace, there's some effort involved. We say, God, thank you for your grace. Now I'm going to apply that grace to live out this life of following Jesus. I'm not going to earn any sort of merit from you, but I'm going to take on that grace and I'm going to live this life as somebody who is holy, somebody who's going to be a follower of Jesus. This whole process of becoming holy is this process of sanctification. And it's all based on grace. I've been reading this book called The Pursuit of the Holy. I thoroughly recommend it. We're using some of the bits from this in this series that we're doing. And in this book, Simon Ponsonby, who wrote that, tells of a story. And it's really a story of holy faces. And it's also a story of what it means to be human. We said right at the beginning that to be holy is to be human. To be holy is to capture something of the identity of what it means to be human. That humans carry something of God's image inside of us. When you look at someone's face, you are seeing something that God has placed in that person. Some characteristics of God's love and holiness and grace and mercy. This story he tells is based in the awfulness that was Auschwitz. And he says, we all know what it is to feel dirty on the inside. And anyone can be made to feel dirty. And when we look at these pictures of Auschwitz, we look at these old black and white pictures, sometimes it feels far removed. And I came across this picture, and somebody's colorized that picture. And when you start to get that color from the black and white, the faces seem to sort of take on a different countenance. Simon Ponsonby writes, the most unholy of places, the most God-forsaken, defiled, and profane was that hell on earth at Auschwitz. He writes, there the demonized Nazis made every attempt to desanitize and dehumanize the Jews. So you've got this place where these people are being, having their humanity stolen from them. It says the women had one tap for 14,000 workers and they were forbidden to wash. Their faces caked in mud, baked by the sun, became covered in sores and scabs, crawling with lice and fleas. He writes, this treatment made it easier to regard the Jews as vermin and then kill them as such. The Nazis worked hard to completely obliterate every trace of dignity and purity, to try and eradicate something of their humanity. He goes on and explains, the traditional places for the Jewish women to articulate holiness was in the home and in their diet, making a distinction between what was sacred and what was profane, offering their lives and work as worship to God, that they were holy. They were called to be holy. But how could this woman who's been having her humanity taken away from her, how could they be holy? How could they resist the literal and the moral filth of Auschwitz? How could she still offer something to God? What happened in Auschwitz is that the women held on to the Jewish notion that the face is a powerful illustration of God turning to his people and people turning to God. Simon writes, the face was a symbol of that sacramental communion. And so though it was strictly forbidden, they would find precious water, even soap, and wash one another's faces. And you think, was it worth the effort? And we think, absolutely. To find something that would start to wash away the mud and the filth, so that the shining face of these women could be made to be seen. It was completely worth it. It says they would wash the faces of those going to the gas chambers, or even of those who had already been murdered. So you've got these women living in these small sheds, looking after each other, washing one another's faces, clinging on to something of their humanity, clinging on to and pursuing holiness, when all around them there's this unholiness and there's this degradation, this filth. Simon Ponsonby concludes, says, this was an act of protest against immorality and evil. It was a no to the profane and the impure. It was a small but massive act of saying to God in this apparent hellhole that we are for you. We want you. We want to be holy. This darkness will not cover us. Even here, we are for you and we make space for you. Even in this filth, we choose to be holy. We need to be holy. We will be holy. Here in this insane, inhuman, dehumanizing cesspit, we bear the image of God. Let our faces shine for you and yours, O God, on us. When you look at your face in the mirror, recognize that you have been made something in the image of God and that you are called to be holy. When you're talking to somebody, you're in face-to-face conversation, you're not just Facebook messaging or texting or whatever else, look at someone's face. Know that they are called to be holy. That the God who made them, the God who loves them, calls them to be holy and calls them to be human. And for those of you that are following Jesus, I want to suggest a couple of things in order to be holy. First of all, like Isaiah, are you aware of what your lips are like? Are your lips, what you say, holy? What words do you use to express yourself? Do your words speak of love and grace and mercy and holiness? Or do you dehumanize other people by the words that you say? And what about your hands? Do we have holy hands? Do we lift up holy hands as like a surrender and also as a consecration? Do we use these hands to bless others? And do we also receive blessing from God? And what about your eyes? Do you say, God, these eyes are holy. I'm going to look at stuff which is going to be beneficial to me. I'm not going to use these eyes for degrading other people or degrading myself. There's a bit in Job 31, this is in the Old Testament, and Job knew something about the objectification of women. He says, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a young woman. Can you say that about yourself? When you look at other people, whether they're male or female, how do you perceive them? Do you look at them at how God sees them? Do you look at them with love and grace and mercy? And then finally, this is what Jesus was most interested in, was what's going on in your heart. For those of us that are following Jesus, do we have holy hearts? Is there something on the inside which is becoming more and more holy? Right at the beginning of his great sermon, Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart. Why? because they will see God. There's this link between holiness and seeing God. So in a moment, we're going to dedicate some babies, and then we're going to do a baptism. And just a brief word about baptism. Baptism is all about new life. We spoke with Becky the other day and talked about how this baptism represents a bath. It represents being made clean and having all the stuff from the past washed away. It also represents a coffin, which is slightly weird, where you die to who you were before, and that as we pull the person back up out of the water, we're bringing them back into new life. That what's gone, what's in the past, stays in that water. The water becomes almost polluted. And as we pull them back out, there's this new sense of life. And it's also a doorway. It's a doorway into this community of faith. And anyone is welcome. Anyone is welcome into church. But this moment of baptism is a holy moment where someone says, you know what, in public, I'm going to live not just for myself, but live for God in amongst this community. We're going to go and get the children in a moment, but I want to pray a blessing over us. So I wonder if we could close our eyes, and this is going to come up later on when we do the dedication as well. This is a blessing that comes right from the Old Testament, and it simply says, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face or lift up his countenance towards you and give you peace. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.